Nights tuned to yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and welcome to this hour of comedy. Later on, its favorite story from 1948, but right now, the Gulfstream Guild Theater, starring Bette Davis, and reportedly her first comedic role for radio. From the same year, she was starring in two Oscar-nominated motion pictures, The Letter with Herbert Marshall, and All This and Heaven Too with Charles Boyer. This episode called Ballerina, Slightly with Accent, a CBS broadcast from March 10, 1940.
William Powell and Bette Davis. The Gulfstream Guild Theater. Your neighborhood good golf dealer and the Gulf Oil Companies welcome you to the Gulf Theater, the one place where you meet all your favorite stars. The director of the Gulf Theater, Roger Pryor.
Good evening, everyone. If I were a newspaper editor, I'd probably say, it's the scoop of the year. Or, if I were a movie producer, I'd shout, colossal headline attraction. But as director of the Gulf Theater, may I simply say, we present William Powell and Bette Davis, co-starred for the first time in their careers. Our play is a comedy, Ballerina, Slightly with Accent, by Robert Riley Crutcher. And here again, the Gulf Theater makes Hollywood history. For this is the first time that Bette Davis has ever been heard on the air in a comedy role. Bette Davis and William Powell have just entered the stage from our right. The audience bursts into applause. They acknowledge the greeting, take their places at the microphones, and the play begins. In tonight's story, we meet Bette Davis as the great Russian ballerina, Tanya Filitrovna. William Powell is the American millionaire Philip Sinclair. The story opens outside the Romanoff Arms Hotel, Central Park West. A crowd of autograph seekers block the sidewalks and overflows into the street, waiting for the glamorous Tanya Premier Danseuse of the Russian Ballet to make her appearance. Androvsky, her manager, is frantically trying to clear a path to a waiting taxi.
Tanya,
where's Tanya? Please stand back from behind. I, Androvsky, command it. Tanya must get to the theater. 2,000 people are waiting to see the greatest ballerina in all Russia. Please, please. Tanya, my child, come, hurry. We will be late to the theater.
No, wait, Androvsky. Comrade, you have made Tanya so very, very happy.
Will you sign my book, Tanya?
But of course.
It's mine, Tanya.
You are all so sweet, you make me want to cry. I do not know why you are so kind to me. I am only simple peasant girl.
Here, comrades, drop something in and pass it along, please.
Androvsky, you will please not to pass the hat for signing the autograph.
Is that your dog, Tanya?
Da, my little Igor.
A genuine Russian wolfhound, imported.
Da, he is my companion when I want to be alone. And to Igor. Da.
What is he eating?
Caviar dog biscuits. Igor, stop. Do not scare these goosey cats. Igor, you hear me? Igor, come back. Igor, stop him. Quickly, taxi.
But Tanya, at the theater, 2,000 people, they wait.
I'll be there so soon as I find my Igor. See, comrade, follow up after the little dog.
What do you say, lady?
The little dog got after following.
I don't get you, lady.
Listen, halfwit. I said follow my dog and make it snappy.
Oh, well, why didn't you say so in the first place? Okay, lady.
Hold it, driver. I'll ask this man.
Okay.
Comrade. Huh? Comrade, excuse it from me to you. But have you seen my little dog, Igor?
Ah, the varage. My spurusky. That's me, Daniel. Brush nice.
One of those foreigners. What? Step on it, driver. Wait a minute, driver. I'll try this one.
Sure, lady.
Comrade, please. Have you seen go by a Russian wolfhound?
Well, I seen a hound, lady, but he wasn't Russian. He was walking slow-like into Central Park.
The park, driver. I'm going after that man in a pool of walk. Mm-hmm.
Wait here, driver.
Okay, lady.
Excuse us, please. But have you seen him?
I beg your pardon?
Here on Park Street?
Why, I didn't really notice. I'm only entered in a hop, skip, and jump.
You are so very funny, I don't think.
Well, this isn't one of my good days. I take it you lost something?
Yes, my precious Prince Igor. He is maybe so high and weigh perhaps 45 pounds.
Aren't you rather a big girl to be running around with midgets?
Prince Igor is a dog, a Russian wolfhound. Have you seen him?
Oh, yes, yes. He had lunch here.
Lunch? You feed him when he is on a diet?
Oh, he had just a snack right here below my knee.
He beat you. My poor Igor, I must find him.
Well, when you do, will you tell him to send back the seat of my trousers?
But you said he beat you on the knee.
He came back for a second helping.
I do not believe it. He is only getting his baby teeth.
Well, he certainly picked a funny place to start teething.
I cannot waste time talking to rabble. Driver, take me to the theater of the ballet.
Okay, lady.
Well, well, this is going to be fun, isn't it?
Get out of this cab.
But two can ride as cheaply as one. It says so right on the door. Unleash the horses, driver.
This was Russia. I have you sent to Siberia. But right have you got to force your way into my taxi? You are ridiculous. You are preposterous. You are...
I am Philip Sinclair. What's your name?
Does it matter?
No, I can start in by calling you Hay. Then sister, then dear, then sweetheart, then darling.
My name is Tanya.
Tanya. Oh, well, that's nice. Well, now that we're acquainted... Where shall we go?
I am going to the theater.
Good, I'll come along. You got two tickets?
I am going to the theater to dance. Alone.
Oh, but it's a lot more fun when you have a partner. I always feel so silly dancing with myself.
I am with the Russian ballet. I am the premier danseur. Now, if you will please ask the driver to stop the cab and then remove yourself from out of my life.
Yeah, you Russians are so impetuous. You know, anyone without my knowledge of human nature would really believe you mean that.
I do mean it. What are you staring at?
Your eyes. They're like limpid pools. I'd love to go wading in them. You know, you remind me of someone.
Oh, I do?
Yes, it's, oh, I know who it is. Betty Davis. Oh, you are much more beautiful, of course.
Betty Davis? What the hem? Driver, here is the theater. Stop.
Okay, lady.
Goodbye. And I do mean goodbye.
Oh, but listen. Ow.
Flowers. Roses, Mademoiselle Tanya. They are from...
I know. Philip Sinclair. Throw them in the alley, Marie.
Miss Tanya, Mr. Philip Sinclair is here.
Throw the flowers out in the alley.
No, but Miss Tanya, he has no flowers.
Then throw him in the alley.
Of the great, incomparable Russian ballet, Mr. Sinclair. What have I and Rovsky to do with parties, eh?
Now, look, Andy, as man to man, there's a girl in your troupe by the name of Tanya.
Ah, Tanya.
Yes. Now, I want to throw this party so I can talk to her, so I can be near her.
You're in love.
Ah.
Mr. Sinclair, I have the great sympathy, but I do not know you.
Well, here's my driver's license and my bank book. No, you're not looking. You're looking at the balance. The name's up here.
Mr. Sinclair. Philip, my son. Sit down. I have a proposition to make. Suppose, just suppose, you own the ballet.
Would that help?
Help? My son, as manager, you could command the dancers to come to your party.
I could? How much would that cost?
Let me see. Last balance, 25, please. It would cost exactly $25,000.
Only... Sold. You'll get your check in the morning, and I'm throwing my party tomorrow night.
I might have known this was your party and a trick. I go back to the hotel.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Tanya. This was the only way I could get to see you.
Ladies and gentlemen, a toast to the Tsar.
The Tsar!
Tanya, if you'd just give me a... Good Lord, what was that?
The wine glasses. It is customary to break them after a toast to the Tsar.
300 crystal glasses on approval. Well, come on, Tanya. I must talk to you alone. Here's the library.
Hey!
It's a little busy in the library. Here, let's try this room. Oh, that's fine, boys, fine. If you run short, I'll borrow some from the neighbors. Lovely people make themselves right at home. Look, there must be some place I can talk to you.
Back in Russia, when the young man wished to talk to me, we went rowing on the Volga.
Was that good?
Yes. There is something about floating over the dark water that makes me very, very romantic.
Oh, yes? Come, Tanya. There's a lake in Central Park where they rent rowboats.
What moon? Up in the sky.
I can't look up. My back's broken. Oh, Tanya, do you realize I've been rowing you around this lake for 2 hours? Don't you feel romantic yet?
Some.
Ah.
But not enough.
Oh. Tanya, we're floating through the night under a canopy of stars.
I'm hungry.
Look, over there are towers of light set against the black velvet curtain of the horizon.
I bet by this time Androvsky have eaten up all the caviar.
We're alone. Two people who were destined to meet and fall in love. Now do you feel romantic?
No. I'm still hungry.
I give up. You win.
Phil.
Let's just forget it.
But I want to explain.
I know. I'm poison to you.
But you're not. I like you. I think you're very nice.
What was that you said?
I said I liked you and you're very nice.
Well, don't look now, but you just dropped your Russian accent.
Yes, that's one of the things I want to explain. I'm not Russian. I was born in Jersey City.
And you never went boating on the Volga?
No.
My back. Well, you sure took me for a sucker. Thanks for the Drosky ride.
Oh, please, Phil, don't be angry.
Can't you see I'm laughing like crazy?
I made up my mind I was going to be a great dancer, and so I became Tanya. My real name is Frances O'Shaughnessy.
O'Shaughnessy.
But I left Frances outside the door the day I walked into the ballet school.
Oh, you left Frances outside the door the day you walked into the ballet, hmm?
You would have liked Frances. She was a very nice girl. And she would have been flattered to know that you loved her. But Tanya, she's hard and cold and thinks only of herself and her career. And if she ever marries, it will only be to another great dancer.
Oh, great dancer.
Well, tomorrow, Tanya and the ballet go to Cleveland.
Cleveland, then?
Sorry you won't see the tryout of my new dance.
Well, life is made up of small disappointments.
It's a beautiful dance.
I'll say so.
My partner is so tall and so handsome and so graceful.
Yes, very interesting.
We float onto the stage, he holding me tightly in his arms.
His arms,
Then cheek to cheek, we sway in tight embrace.
Cheek
and
to
at
cheek.
The finale, reclining languorously in his arms, our lips unite in the ecstasy of adoration.
Mm, how lovely.
You aren't jealous, are you? Phil. Phil, I'm talking to you. Phil.
Who is this Phil?
But that's you. You're Phil.
You make the mistake. I am Boris. I have left Phil outside the door the day I walk into the ballet. Phil was nice, but me, Boris. He think of nothing but career. I am cold, hard, calculating. That's me, Boris. A low-down heel.
As the curtain rises on the second act, Androvsky is preparing to rehearse the ballet as Philip approaches.
Androvsky!
Philip, my son. What is this foolishness Tanya was telling me?
It isn't foolishness. I want to be in the ballet.
But, my dear Philip, the ballet is for great dancers.
I can dance. That is, I can learn to dance. Besides, I'm backing this shindig, and what I say goes.
No, don't get excited. I'll find a place for you and still keep my conscience clear. You can be a hayman in the ballet.
A hayman in the ballet?
Yeah, I'll show you. Every time I hold up my hand, you say, hey. All right, boys, music.
Hey. Hey. Hey.
Very good, very good.
Hey.
That's enough.
Oh.
You can be in the chorus.
That's fine. A Russian chorus boy. Look here, little father. I'm going to dance with Tanya, and if you don't like it, you can give up the ballet.
Give up the ballet? Yes. Yes, someday I will give up the ballet. I'll go away and forget the ballet. Spend the rest of my life in ballet ballet.
How do you do, sir? Any book in particular you're looking for?
Oh, yes. Yes, I'll take all the books you have on Russian dancing.
Very good, sir. Shall I wrap them up and send them?
No, I'll eat them here. What? One to the left, two to the right. One to the left, two to the right. Ooh! Oh! Oh, my toe.
That'll be enough, miss.
I say that'll be enough, miss.
Oh, let me see. I pay you 50 cents an hour. How much do I owe you?
$800.
Half hour.
Here's your aspirin, Miss Tanya.
Thank you. And leave those sleeping powders. I have a feeling I'll need them after this performance. That'll be all, Marie.
Hello, Tanya. Ah, having a little snack. Am I late?
Not late enough.
Now, is that a nice way to talk to your new dancing partner? Oh, boy. We'll kill the audience.
Uh-huh. Or vice versa.
Yeah. Oh, Tanya, why don't you marry me and give up this silly business? Tanya. Oh, what a beautiful name. Tanya. Reminds me of a beautiful song. Put Tanya, old gray bonnet, little red buttons. That dog has no sense of humor.
Go away, Prince Igor.
He can't help it. This room isn't big enough for me and his teeth.
15 minutes.
Say, why should I quit on the night of my debut? For all the practicing I've done, hour after hour, night after night, week after week. I even took a correspondence course. When I gave that up, I got tired of dancing with a letter carrier. But don't think I haven't learned anything. Here, watch me do the backflip cartwheel.
Well, look out for the table.
Oh, don't worry about me. Okay. Ready? Here I come. Oh, my back. Oh, give me a hand, Tanya.
You've upset the whole table.
Ooh.
Wait till I pick up some of these dishes. Pick up those two olives near your feet.
Oh, thank goodness. I thought they were in my eyes.
What's amiss? Look, you almost got the mustard all over you. Ah, you've made Prince Igor angry.
Look, I don't mind him biting me, but if he expects me to put mustard on my leg, that's going too far. Now, and I'll show you my flying through the air spit.
Wait. I'd better close the window first.
10 minutes.
Uh-oh, we'll be on soon.
I don't care if you do own this ballet. You're not going to be my dancing partner if I have
What?
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all. You know, I was just thinking. How selfish of me to consider only myself. After all, why shouldn't you dance? Why should I deprive the world of such a great talent? Yes. Come, let's drink to it. Wait, I'll mix you a drink. Now, don't look.
I'm not suspicious, but it's taking her longer than it took Dr. Jekyll to mix his drink.
There you are. Drink it down.
Tanya, by a very strange coincidence, I don't happen to be thirsty.
Just one teeny-weeny drinky-winky?
Not on your lifey-wifey.
Oh, it's my own special drink. It is a little potent. I call it the fire.
Yeah, the petrifier.
Oh, come, Philip, this won't hurt you.
It won't, huh?
No.
Then why is that smoke coming out of it?
Oh, don't be a child, Philip. Drink it down fast.
What's the matter? You afraid the glass will melt?
My goodness, but you're stubborn.
Lights, please. Curtain going.
Oh, I have no more time to waste if you must dance. Very well. But first, let me see if your costume is all right.
Yes?
Pull up your trouser leg a little higher.
Oh, like this?
Yes. Quick, Igor, bite.
Oh!
Hold him, Igor.
Ow.
Don't let him go till I get back.
Oh.
Igor. Wake up, Igor. Come on, open your eyes. Look at me. I didn't mean it, Igor. Oh, come on, doggy. Wake up, won't you?
Oh, what happened? What happened to Igor?
It's
what
your
have
own
you done to
fault.
Him?
You let that hound hound me until I lost my temper.
What did you do?
Well, I bet it.
Oh, my... my poor Igor.
He'll be all right. He just fainted, the sissy.
He's not a sissy. He just can't stand the sight of blood.
Wait, he moved. Look, he's opening his mouth.
Oh, Igor, bark to me. Oh, Igor, my precious darling. My sweet little lambikins, my itsy-bitsy darling.
You know, I'm going to miss him.
Miss him?
Yes. While you were in your dance and Igor was in his trance, I decided the ballot could struggle along without me.
Tanya, Tanyushka, your new ballet is a success. The critics are raving.
Well, I guess I better go.
We'll go on an international tour. London, Paris, Switzerland.
I guess there's nothing more I can say.
You mean this is goodbye?
The Androvsky Ballet, the sensation of the world.
Oh, before I go, Tanya, there was something, what was it? Yes. Will you marry me?
Okay.
What? What did you say?
I don't know. Why, what did you say?
I said, will you marry me? And you said, okay.
I did? Oh, that's wonderful.
The Androvsky Ballet. 3 cheers for Androvsky.
We'll find a justice of the peace tonight. Oh, boy, this calls for a drink. Here. Here's to us.
Oh, Philip, you've drunk it. The fire.
Yeah, it's not bad. What's in it?
Sleeping powder.
Uh-oh. That is bad. How long before it hits?
About half an hour.
Well, then let's hurry. Come on. We still got time to get married.
Philip Sinclair, take this woman to be your lawful...
Excuse me.
Darling, try to control your enthusiasm.
Do you, Philip Sinclair, take this... Most of the men seem nervous when I get to this part, but he seems so relaxed.
Oh, never mind that. Never mind that. Just get on with the ceremony.
Do you take her to be your lawful wedded wife? Well, do you?
Wake up, Phil. Wake up. Say I do.
I.
Phil, now, Phil, come on, try. Try.
I do.
And up and at you, man in white. Well, we made it, didn't we?
Oh, Phil, darling, we're married. We're married, Phil. Aren't you going to kiss me? Oh, Phil.
Thank you, Betty, and thank you, Phil, for a swell performance. Now, you must stay right here, because it's time for our Gulf Question Box. Everybody ready? The first question goes to Betty Davis, who's working hard on All This and Heaven, Too, at Warner Brothers. Betty, I hope you missed those, because I've got a forfeit for you that's a honey. Now, tell me, has Lewis Stone always portrayed Judge Hardy in the Hardy Family series?
Why, yes, of course.
Aha, victim, finally. No, you're wrong, Betty. Lionel Barrymore was Judge Hardy in the very first Hardy Family picture. And for your forfeit, once when I was at your house, I heard you sing a song. Oscar's boys have the music handy, and you've got to sing it right now. The song is My Pretty Quadroon. Oscar, let's go.
But, Roger, must I sing?
Yep, stand right there.
Well, I might as well disgrace myself now as later.
A chord on the guitar, maestro.
Who was so happy as we? She had lived like the flower in peach. And the light in her violet eyes. There shone on a donkey like me. Her form was exceedingly fair. She had lips like the red rose in June, and her ringlets of dark glossy hair was the curls of my pretty quadroon. Oh, my pretty quadroon, my flower that faded too soon, my heart like the strings on my banjo, all broke for my pretty quadroon.
My heart like the strings on my banjo. Thank you, Mary. And right now, I'd like to thank you on behalf of the Screen Guild for appearing twice in the Gulf Theater this season.
We're always glad to accept your invitations, Roger. But when we appear in the Gulf Theater, the money we would ordinarily receive, Gulf gives instead to the Motion Picture Relief Fund to help meet its needs and to build a home for less fortunate members of our profession. It is a great work and important.
Thank you very much, Betty Davis. And thank you, Bill Powell. Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Powell's latest picture is MGM's Another Thin Man. Be with us again next Sunday. Until then, this is Roger Pryor saying good night, everybody, for your neighborhood Good Gulf Dealer. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Gulf Screen Guild Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from March 10th, 1940. You're listening to an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Lifonier. Now time for an episode of Favorite Story, where celebrities would pick out a favorite story to have it dramatized in the syndicated series. The Metropolitan Opera's Helen Traubel chose a story penned by Anatole France, which was first a stage play in 1908, called La Comédie de Celui qui épousa une femme muette, or The Man Who Married a Dumb Wife. This episode first heard on April 17, 1948.
This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. Of the many great plays produced by the French masters, The Man Who Married a Dumb Wife by Anatole France ranks as one of the finest. Written originally by Monsieur France for the entertainment only of his friends, this rollicking, fast comedy was quickly grabbed by the regular theaters and has been played successfully many times since in Paris, London, and New York. We present it this week on Favorite Story. It is the choice of Miss Helen Traubel, distinguished soprano of the Metropolitan Opera Company. Although the scene of our play is set in the Paris of a bygone century, the satire and conversation might well be of today. It is concerned principally with the, loquacity of the fair sex. But I hasten to remind our listeners that this is fiction. Simple fiction. And that any resemblance to your wife or mine is purely coincidental. But now to the play. And while you take a stroll down the avenue, enjoying the sunshine of a bright Paris morning, listening to the street cries of the vegetable and fruit sellers, the chimney sweeps and candle merchants, I, if you will allow me, will put on the robes of Judge Léonard Botal, magistrate of the French Civil and Criminal Courts, and will rejoin you in a few moments as The Man Who Married a Dumb Wife.
Good day, Judge Botal.
Ah, Adam Frumet. What a pleasant surprise to see you. It's been many years.
It has indeed. I hope I find Your Honor well, Your Honor.
Fairly well, fairly. What good wind brings you to Paris, Master Adam?
Well, I've come all the way from Chartres to talk to Your Honor about a case pending before Your Honor. A poor orphan girl.
Poor orphan girl, huh? Adam, do you remember the days when we were law students together at Orléans University?
Yes. We used to play the flute together.
Yeah.
Two flutes.
And take the lovely young ladies to picnics and dance from morning till night. It's a wonder we ever learned any law.
What days. But I have come here, Your Honor, to hand Your Honor a statement in behalf of a poor orphan girl.
Will she give good fees?
She is a poor orphan girl.
Yes, I know. But will she give good fees? Well,
she's been robbed so thoroughly by her guardians, she's nothing left but her eyes to weep with.
Oh.
But if she wins this suit, she'll be rich again. She will give plentiful proof of her gratitude.
Orphan girl, eh? Well, Now, give me the statement. I'll look into the matter.
Oh, Your Honor does not know how grateful I am, Your Honor. My dear old schoolfellows.
I'll consider the case without fear or favor.
Oh, but of course that goes without saying. Now, tell me, does everything go well with Your Honor?
Yes, sir.
You seem worried. And yet you have a place of honor and distinction. The judgeship's a good one.
It ought to be a good one. I paid enough for it, and I didn't get cheated.
Well, then perhaps you are lonely. Why don't you get married?
What? Don't you know, Master Adam, that I have just been married?
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
But, my dear friend, why are you so sad? Isn't your wife from a good family?
Oh, the best. She is Catherine Montmichel, the seventh daughter of the criminal court judge at Salancy.
Oh. Is she not beautiful, then?
The most exquisite creature in the world.
Then what is wrong, my friend?
Alas, she is dumb. She cannot speak a word.
And you didn't notice it until after you'd married her?
Oh, I couldn't help noticing it, of course, but it didn't seem to matter so much then as it does now. I considered her beauty and her property, and I dreamed of the happiness I would have with her. But now I do wish she could talk. It would be a real intellectual pleasure for me. Besides, it would be a practical advantage for the household.
Oh, it would.
Certainly. What does the judge need most in his house? Why, a good-looking wife who can receive applicants for justice.
It's true.
And by subtle hints and turns of the conversation, gently bring them to the point of making proper gift offerings.
It's true.
So that their cases may receive, how shall I put it, more careful attention.
Yes, I see Your Honor's point, Your Honor. I do indeed.
Yes, people need to be encouraged to make proper presents. And a woman, by clever speech, can get a good ham from one, a roll of cloth from another, and influence still another to give some fine fat poultry. But this poor, dumb thing, Catherine, gets nothing at all.
I feel for Your Honor, my old friend.
And well, you should. While my fellow judges have their kitchens and cellars brimming over with good things, all thanks to their wives, I hardly get enough to keep the pot boiling. But that's not all I'm losing, Master Adam. I am losing my spirits, too, and my wits.
Oh, no reason to do that, Your Honor. Think for a moment. There are advantages in Your Honor's case. Many a husband would gladly trade places with Your Honor.
No, Master Adam, you don't understand. Think, when I hold my wife in my arms, a woman as beautiful as the finest carved statue, and quite as silent, it makes me feel strange and uncanny. I even ask myself if I'm holding a graven image, or a mechanical toy, or a magic doll made by a sorcerer.
What a notion.
And sometimes I think the entire household is bewitched by her beautiful silence.
Your Honor has convinced me. I can easily see how a mute wife is a pretty poor conversationalist.
Yeah.
And I agree that talking isn't much fun when you get no answer.
Now you know why I'm in such low spirits.
Your Honor, there may be a remedy. Tell me, is Your Honor's wife deaf as well as dumb?
Oh, Catherine is no more deaf than you and I. Even less. She can hear the very grass growing.
Then the case is not hopeless.
Huh?
No, it's child's play for a doctor to untie her tongue.
What?
The operation is so simple, it's done every day to puppies that cannot learn to bark.
Where is such a doctor?
There is a famous one at the Sign of the Dragon, just around the corner from your own house.
Around the corner?
Yes, Master Simon Colleen, who has a fine reputation for loosing the tongues of the ladies of Paris.
Uh-huh.
In a turn of the hand, he'll draw from your wife's lips a flood of speech, just as you turn on a spigot and let the water run forth like a sweet purling brook.
Oh, is this true, Master Adam? You're not deceiving me. You're not speaking as a lawyer in court.
Oh, I'm speaking as a friend and telling you the truth.
Then I must send for this doctor immediately.
Your Honor, before you do, think it over once more.
No.
Because though there are some disadvantages in having a dumb wife, there are some advantages, too.
No, my mind is made up.
Then good day, Your Honor, my dear old schoolfellow. Remember, I am truly your friend. So consider carefully the case of the poor orphan girl.
The poor orphan girl, yes. Now, be back this afternoon, Master Adam. I'll have my decision ready.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor.
Giles! Ah, the rogue never hears me. He's probably in the kitchen, as usual, upsetting the soup and the servant. What a knave and a scoundrel. Giles! Here, you rapscallion.
Present.
Go straight to the famous doctor, Master Simon Colline, around the corner at the Sign of the Dragon. Tell him to come at once to treat a dumb woman.
Yes, Your Honor.
Be off, and bring the famous doctor back with you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Ha, ha, ha. What a surprise for that lovely creature. I wonder what will be the first adoring words she says. Now, let me see. I have 14 more verdicts to write out, besides the decree for the poor orphan girl. Yeah. And that's no small labor, because a decree, to do credit to a judge, must be cleverly worded, subtle, elegant, and adorned with all the ornaments of style and of thought. The ideas must be pleasingly conceived and charmingly expressed. Where should one show one's wit if not in a verdict? Ah, Catherine, my love, I didn't even hear you come in. You are like the fairy forms in the stories that seem to glide upon the air, or like the dreams which the gods send down to happy mortals. My love, you are a marvel of nature and a triumph of art. You have all charms but speech. Wouldn't you be glad to have that too? Wouldn't you be happy to let your lips utter all the pretty thoughts I can read in your eyes? Wouldn't you like to tell your husband how you love him? Yes, wouldn't it be delightful to call him your treasure, your sweetheart? Yes, yes, it would. Well, I have a piece of wonderful news for you, my love. There is a doctor, a great, a famous doctor, who is coming here at any moment now, and he will make you talk. And then, what a full, beautiful life we shall have, my darling. Just consider the compliments you can pay your husband, my love. And your voice. Ah, I hear it even now. Gentle as the soft breezes, warm and low and sweet. Tones as golden as a bird's song at evening. And speaking to me always of the love that is in your heart. Eh, my love? Eh?
Honor, here's the great doctor you sent for.
Oh, yeah, bring him in.
I am Master Simon Colline himself, Judge Potal.
Ah, doctor, come in.
You called for my services.
Yes, doctor, yes, to make a dumb woman speak.
Ah, and this is the patient?
It is. My own sweet, adorable, but silent wife.
I shall examine her in the latest scientific fashion. Milady, open your mouth. Say something. Diagnosis? She's dumb.
Oh, what a brilliant physician.
Boo!
My dear doctor, why did you scare my wife like that?
Diagnosis? She is not deaf.
Will you make her speak?
In a moment, we shall perform a slight operation.
Yes, yes, but be careful. She is the treasure of my life.
Operation is over.
Can she speak now? Can she?
Oh, first, she must swallow this pill.
A pill?
A pill.
She needs a pill to speak?
Oh, yes, because of the interdependence of the organs.
Oh, yes, naturally.
There. The pill is swallowed?
Ah.
And now, milady, speak.
Speak. Speak, my angel, speak. What will be the first words to fall from those lovely lips?
Bring me my looking glass.
She spoke.
You silly goose. You shall give me a new satin gown and a velvet trim cape for my
birthday.
And that's not all.
She spoke.
I want my room redone and I want my mother to come visit me.
Yes.
And I don't get half enough sweets.
My
and
dear,
oh, I want a great many things. A little puppy dog. Don't
I
you
know,
think that
my dear, you
wonderful, Leonard? You know, of course, my wardrobe is really dreadful.
Of course you should.
I just must have some new things and
yes,
the very
dear,
latest fashion. And that's not all. I can just see you all in a picture.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Yes. How are you this afternoon?
Well, fairly well.
I am sorry to disturb you, but have you had a chance to look into the case of my client, the poor orphan girl?
Not yet. No, I would have done it if I hadn't been so besieged.
Oh.
See, I've been entertaining the flower of the medical faculty.
Yes.
It's good. Poor orphan girl! It was you!
Hmm?
It was your advice that brought me all this trouble.
Why, what do you mean?
I sent for that famous doctor of yours. He twisted my wife's tongue ligament, gave her a pill, and she spoke.
She spoke? Did she need a pill to speak?
Yes, because of the interdependence of the organs.
Oh. Well, anyhow, the main point is she spoke. What did she say?
She said, bring me my looking glass. And seeing me quite overcome with emotion, she said, you silly goose, you should give me a new satin gown and a velvet trim cape for my birthday.
And she kept on talking?
She hasn't stopped yet.
And yet you don't thank me for my advice? You don't thank me for having suggested that wonderful doctor? Aren't you overjoyed to hear your wife speak?
Yes, I thank you with all my heart, Master Adam. And I am overjoyed to hear my wife speak.
What's bothering you, Your Honor? Isn't your wife's speech clear?
Yes, it's clear. And abundant. Mm. Its abundance will be a terrible trial to me if it keeps up at the rate at which it started.
So I feared that beforehand. But you mustn't be discouraged too soon. Perhaps this flood of words will ebb. Is the first overflow of a spring too long bottled up?
Oh.
My congratulations on a successful operation, Your Honor.
Congratulations.
My client's name is Emmeline de la Garandière, the poor orphan girl.
Yes.
I will be back later in the day to find out your decision in the matter.
Yes. Well, to work. I'll look into your case at once, Master Adam.
I will return later in the day, Your Honor.
Statement on behalf of Ermeline Jacinthe, Marthe de la Garandière, gentlewoman.
What are you doing, my dear? You seem busy.
Yes, I'm...
Aren't you afraid it'll make you ill?
Well, I'm...
You must rest once in a while.
Why don't you
tell me what you're doing,
my
dear?
My love,
Is it such a great secret? Can't I know about it?
My love,
Oh, if it's a secret, don't tell me.
Won't you give me a chance to answer? I'm examining a case and preparing to draw up a verdict on it.
Oh, is drawing up a verdict very important?
Most certainly it is. In the first place, people's honor, their liberty, and sometimes even their life may depend on it.
Of course.
And furthermore, the judge must show both the depth and the profundity of his thought and the finish of his style.
Oh, then examine your case and prepare your verdict, my dear. I'll be silent.
Yes, good, right. Ermeline Jacinthe Marthe de la Garandière. A gentlewoman.
My dear, which do you think would be more becoming to me? A damask gown or a velvet suit with a turkey skirt?
Know.
I think a flowered satin would suit my age best, especially a light-colored one with a small flower pattern.
Yes, perhaps.
Don't you think, my dear, that it's quite improper to have a hoop skirt very full? That fashion won't last, I'm sure. Someday the court ladies will give it up, and then every woman in town will make haste to follow their example. Don't you think so?
Yes.
Now, about high heels. They must be designed just right.
High heels.
A woman is judged by her footwear. You can always tell a real fine lady by her shoes. You agree with me, don't you, dear?
Yes, I agree.
Then write out your verdict. I shan't say another word.
That's right. Now, the guardian of said young lady, namely Hugo Thomas of Pied-de-Loup, stole from the said young lady...
My dear, if one were to believe the wife of the Chief Justice, the world has grown very clever.
From the said young lady...
It's bad. Young men nowadays don't marry. They prefer to hang around rich old ladies. And meanwhile, the poor girls are left to wither. Do you think it's as bad as all that? Do answer me, ducky.
My darling, won't you please be silent one moment or go somewhere else and talk...
Dear, don't worry. I shan't say another word.
Good.
Not a word.
The said Pied de Loup, counting both hay crops and... apple crops?
We shall have some minced mutton and what's left of that goose for supper tonight, my dear. Tell me, is that enough? The cost of living is getting higher all the time. Chickens and salads and meats and fruits have all gone up, so...
I beg you.
It's no wonder everything goes up, people. It gets more extravagant every day. For my part, I can't understand how people can stuff themselves with so many kinds of food and waste so much in the bargain. Now, what I like best is capon's kidneys with artichoke hearts.
I shall go mad.
Oh,
I know
dear,
I shall
dear,
go mad.
My dear, I shan't say another word. Not a single word. For I see that my chattering might possibly disturb your work.
If you would only do as you say.
I shan't even open my lips.
Splendid.
You see, Ducky, I'm not saying another word.
Yes.
I'm letting you work in perfect peace and quiet.
Yes.
And you can write out your verdict quite undisturbed. Is it almost done?
It never will be if you don't keep still. Item. £120 a year, which the said unworthy guardian stole from the poor orphan girl.
Listen. Didn't you hear a cry of fire?
Poor orphan
girl. I thought
girl.
I did.
But perhaps I may have been mistaken. Is there anything as terrifying as a fire?
Poor orphan girl.
Last year I saw the houses on Exchange Bridge burn up. Oh, what confusion, what havoc.
Lord, have mercy upon
me. Oh, what makes you groan so, dear? Tell me. Tell me, what's the matter?
I can't endure it another minute.
Oh, what you need, Leonard, is some rest and
quiet.
Will
you never be still?
No, don't be cross, dear. I'm not saying a word.
Would to heaven.
Leonard! Here comes Madame de Lebrun down the street. Oh, I hope she doesn't come to visit us. She jabbers like a magpie. She does nothing but gabble, gabble, gabble from morning till night. What a chatterbox. It's lucky for you that you didn't marry her. I know you don't like rattle-tongued women. And that woman, just nothing but talk.
I can't stand it.
Where are you going? Leonard, what are you going to do?
I'm going crazy. I'm going to the lunatic asylum for a rescue.
Help!
Crazy.
Murder!
Crazy.
My husband's gone mad! Stop me!
Your Honor, where is Your Honor running to?
Where's that doctor? Doctor, Master Adam, where does he live?
Oh, right in here, Your Honor, but calm yourself. Tell me, have you written the verdict?
The verdict?
Yeah, the poor orphan girl.
Oh, yes, here, I have it in my hand. Look, here it is.
Oh, thank you.
Whereas Mademoiselle Piedeloup did fraudulently steal from her guardian, poor orphan girl, 10 loads of hay and high heels. And whereas there is nothing so terrifying as a fire.
What in heaven's name are you reading?
Oh, Master Adam, I need that doctor. Where is he?
Right here.
Yes.
Yes. What's wrong?
Oh, good doctor, I'm in haste to see you. I urgently beg for your services.
For yourself? What is your disease? Where is the pain?
No, for my wife, the one who was dumb.
Has she any trouble now?
None at all. I have all the trouble now.
What? The trouble is with you, and it's your wife you want cured?
Good doctor, she talks too much. You should have given her speech, yes, but not so much speech. Since you've cured her of her dumbness, she's driving me mad. I can't bear another word. I've come to you to ask you to make her dumb again.
That is impossible.
What's that? You can't take away the power of speech which you gave her?
No, that I cannot do.
Oh.
My skill is great, but it stops short of that.
Oh, no, don't tell me that.
We have medicines to make women speak, but we have none to make them keep silent.
You haven't? Is that your last word? You drive me to despair.
Alas, Your Honor. There is no elixir, balm, magistorium, opiate, unguent, ointment, local application, electuary, anesthetic, nor panacea that can cure the excess of glottal activity in women.
Oh, I'm lost.
If I could discover such an herb, I should be the richest man on earth.
Oh, I'm a ruined man. There's nothing left for me to do but tie a stone around my neck and jump into the river. I can't live in this hubbub. You don't want me to drown myself straight away, then you must find me some cure.
There is none, I tell you, for your wife. But there might be one for you, if you would consent to take it.
Explain it, doctor, for heaven's sake.
For the clack of a wife, there's but one cure in life. Let a husband be deaf, it's the only relief.
You mean death?
It's the only relief.
Don't you understand? That's the finest discovery yet. Since he can't make your wife dumb, this great doctor offers to make you deaf.
What? Certainly. Do you see any disadvantages in becoming deaf?
Oh, of course I do.
You think so? You are a judge. Of what disadvantage is there in a judge's being deaf?
None at all. Believe me, I am a practicing attorney. There is none at all.
What harm could come to justice thereby?
No harm at all. Quite the contrary. Judge Botal could then hear neither lawyers nor prosecutors, and so would run no risk of being deceived by a lot of lies.
That's true.
His Honor will judge all the better.
Maybe so.
Never doubt it.
But how do you perform this?
This cure? Kaphosis.
Kaphosis?
Quite. A pinch of this white powder placed in the ear is enough to make you deaf as heaven when it is angry, or as deaf as a post.
No, I don't want it. I refuse to be deaf.
What? You decline kaphosis?
No kaphosis.
You don't want to be healed?
I will not be deaf. Absolutely not.
They told me he came in here. Doctor, I am a devoted wife.
The powder. Give me the powder. Your powder. Your white powder, doctor. For the love of heaven.
Never was a deafness producing powder more needed, that's sure.
Yes.
Sit down. I will inject the powder.
Yes.
Now, first in the left ear.
Yes.
So. And then in the right ear.
Yes.
There. 'Tis done.
Oh. There you are. Oh, my dear, I've been so worried about you. I thought you were running away from me. Oh, my dear, answer me. Have I ever failed you in anything? Am I a naughty woman? Oh, no, I've been a quiet, devoted, attentive wife.
Lovely, lovely. Can't hear a thing.
Listen to me, Leonard. I love you tenderly.
Oh,
I will open my heart
bliss.
To you. I'm not one of those light,
doctor.
Frivolous women who are afflicted or consoled by airy, nothing amused by trifles. I need
wonderful.
Companionship. I need to be understood.
Ecstasy.
That's my nature. I was born so.
Yes, darling, all the high heels you want.
Oh, Ducky, I love you so. And I want to keep telling you and telling you
delicious.
And telling you
and
telling you and telling you.
Delicious. And so the curtain falls on Anatole France's celebrated comedy, The Man Who Married a Dumb Wife. Legend has it that if you visit that particular neighborhood of Paris, the lovely lady is talking still. And the judge still smiles, not hearing a blessed word. My thanks to B. Benaderet, Peter Rankin, Hans Conried, and Louis Van Ruten, who joined me in this performance. And a grateful bow in the direction of Claude Sweeten, who composed and conducted the music.
Favorite story on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated episode from April 17th, 1948. And that wraps up this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.